So tonight, we're going to be talking about the five aggregates of experience, and in Pali, they're called the khandhas. They're most often talked about as the five aggregates of clinging. Our guiding teacher, Tim Giles, says that these aggregates, these khandhas, are just how we live. They're all just normal and ordinary. It's the clinging that becomes the problem. And the Buddha talked about these as the five aggregates of clinging. So what are these five aggregates? Material form, feeling tone, perception, mental formations, and consciousness. Don't worry if you didn't catch them. Don't worry about writing them down. We're going to be repeating them a lot. So you'll catch it as we're going. The five aggregates describe how suffering is caused. You know, the Buddha is quoted as having said that I teach two things, suffering and the end of suffering. And he was really committed to understanding how suffering was created and how it could be ended. In one of his earliest talks, the Buddha gave a short definition of suffering as the five clinging khandhas. To understand how suffering can be ended, we have to look more closely at how it arises, or in other words, how these khandhas, the form and feeling tone, perception, mental formations and consciousness, how they become clinging khandhas, how we create a sense of self through clinging to phenomena that arise and pass away, that aren't fixed or solid or permanent. And how we take this clinging, this making it all about me, this is the suffering, this is dukkha. And we study this and practice with it as part of our path toward freedom. In the Buddha's words, nothing whatsoever is to be clung to as I, me, or mine. So a few words about this teaching. This is the third time that I've been part of the Buddhist Essentials on the Five Aggregates. And each time it's challenging. This is not Buddhism light. It really asks a lot of us to bring all of our best selves to this practice. And with so many of the teachings, you know, we start out just understanding it conceptually. You know, we listen to the words and sometimes we'll try to find maybe some different words for it. But that's where we kind of start. So these five khandhas are aggregates. And aggregates in this teaching are just heaps or piles of activities and functions. They're just a conglomeration of things all piled together. The process of making these piles into something about me is how that distress is constructed. So we start out conceptually, but in order to really understand these, to grok these, we really have to work with them and understand them experientially. And this is where our mindfulness is our best friend. We watch what is arising in the body and mind, and we bring our best intention to be attentive. Ajahn Chah says this is not an intellectual exercise. If you try to understand this intellectually, he says, your head will explode. So we're going to be working with this, and Lyndall and I are going to be talking about how we practice with it, and we really hope that what we have to share will be beneficial to your own practice. So as with other of the more challenging teachings in the Dhamma, really be gentle with yourselves as you explore this, especially if this is newer to you. You know, remember to acknowledge when you've seen that clinging, that stickiness, that identification has come up. That's a real moment of insight. So sometimes this learning about the five aggregates and how they become just regular things and become objects of clinging, sometimes that insight happens in hindsight. And that might continue for a really long time. I know that's been true for me. But as our mindfulness strengthens and we actually continuously note and feel the arising and passing away of phenomena, it becomes easier to sense those moments of identification, those moments where there's real potential for freedom. Also, we're not trying to get rid of something. We all, you know, we need to have a healthy sense of self. That's necessary just to be, you know, healthy beings and function in the worlds of work and family and home and responsibilities. In fact, we need a healthy sense of self and even to have a spiritual practice to notice when things are arising and passing away, to ask questions, to do the investigation, to set intentions and be discerning and make really skillful choices of speech and action. The problem of selfing arises with the stickiness and the grasping. When we try to make something solid out of something that is not solid, that's unsubstantial, that's ephemeral and passing, holding on to something that by its very nature is going to pass away. Another thing to keep in mind as we delve into these is that clinging is on a continuum. Many teachers talk about it using phrases of thinning and thickening to describe how sometimes the clinging and the sense of self is really strong and the adhesive is right there. And other times it's kind of like the tape has lost most of its adhesiveness and it's just weaker. The sense of self is really just another arising, just like material objects. One of the main teachers in our Vipassana tradition, Joseph Goldstein, talks about the self as just a constellation, another one of these conglomerations of rapidly changing elements, each one of which is momentary and insubstantial. The self is another one of those mental constructs. The five aggregates of clinging show us how this is true and how the sense of self is created. So I'm going to be talking about the first two, form, material form, and feeling tone. And then we'll take a break, and then Lyndall will talk about the last three. So it's really, I'm often just so impressed at how the Buddha put together his teachings. It makes so much sense that the very first aggregate would be material form, the body. Joseph Goldstein again describes this, and many teachers do, about the four primary physical elements of earth, air, fire, and water. And as we were sitting, I was encouraging you to experience some of that sense of earth and air, fire, and water. You know, 2,600 years ago, they didn't understand some of the same things about science as we do now. And so the scientific understanding has really changed and the description of matter has become way more defined. But there's something about this basic framework that's still really helpful. It's a way of describing a felt sense of the physical material world. And it's hard to understand a felt sense of atoms or protons that Joseph talks about. So this simple framework points to our subjective felt sense. It directs us to our experience, hardness, softness, heat, lightness, flow. Whenever we're mindful of a physical sensation, we're in this first aggregate. And contemplating these physical elements can help us go from concept to direct experience. I recently listened to one of Joseph's talks about the aggregates, and I'm going to summarize some of how he talked about the difference between concept and direct experience. I found it really helpful. You know, when we're sitting and there's some discomfort that comes up, we usually use phrases like, oh, my back hurts or my knee hurts. But really, there is no sensation of back or knee. Back and knee are concepts with this first aggregate, rupa, this material form. It leads us to what is actually going on. There's pressure in the back, maybe a throbbing sensation, maybe a sharp stabbing sensation in the back. or there's heat in the inside of the knee, or a stiffness. So by focusing on these direct experiences, we then can really take the next step, which is to watch as these sensations morph, and they get deep, they might get more intense, they might get less intense, they change, they arise, and they pass away. We all live in such a world of concepts, and we believe that these concepts don't change. So we use the same words day after day: knee, back, shoulders, you, me. And as we repeat these concepts, we believe that there's something permanent that these words allude to. And it strengthens our idea that there is permanence. But when we contemplate the first aggregate of rupa as sensation, as direct experience, we can really experience impermanence and experience the arising and passing away of these sensations. So we bring our best mindfulness when our minds are collected and quiet and undistracted and resting in awareness, and we contemplate rupa, the body, this physical material form. It becomes so clear that what we're aware of is the different sensations that arise, and that's all that is there. Pressure, movement, heat, sensations. There's no body, no foot, no leg, no me, no you. We see that there's really nothing else here except these direct sense experiences. And this understanding becomes so possible as we contemplate this first aggregate. As we discover that there's really nothing solid here other than these changing sensations, then there's nothing to cling to, nothing to make it into me, I, or mine. A lot of my sits in the last couple weeks have really been informative around these aggregates, and I imagine it's partly because I've been thinking a lot about this talk. Yesterday morning, I sat with the Tuesday morning drop-in sit with Tim, and I became really aware of when I left my body and got all caught up in the thoughts, and then one thought led to another thought, this whole stream. And before I knew it, there was, I need to do this, and don't forget about that, and you better write this down. And there was so much soothe there in all of those thoughts. And then I came back to how the back of my thighs felt on my chair. And there was just sensation, and there was almost none of me there. There was no soothe. I wasn't identifying with these thighs as mine, or even the chair as mine. It was really just sensation. It was a nice sit to kind of bring that into more focus. Another sit this morning, on Wednesday mornings, I sit with a small group. And right before this sit, I had taken a sip of warm coffee. And when I first started sitting, I noticed first the aroma that was still in my nostrils from the coffee. And I noticed what happens in the mouth after a drink of a warm liquid. And within seconds, that sensation in the mouth changed, and the production of saliva changed and stuff. But that was where I was. I was in the direct experience of my body. And when you practice with this first aggregate, it's really a great reminder of why we sit. You know, there's so much mindfulness instruction out there in the world, and they say that you sit so, you know, to find ease and calm and freedom from all the stresses in the world. But really, the reason why we sit is to learn about the mind. And that's what the Buddha's instructions are all about. As we practice with this first aggregate, it can really offer a profound lesson in seeing the arising and passing away of sensation, thought, experience. With this first aggregate, we're only really dealing with material form, but as we develop this skill in watching as the sensations arise and pass away, we can do the same kind of thing with thoughts or moods or emotions. It becomes easier to not cling to or identify with them. You know, as the Buddha said, there is nothing to cling to, nothing to make into my, me or mine. It is often said that the body is the primary building block of self. The primary building block of self. So working with form with this very first aggregate is really a crucial part of this practice. And we never leave the body behind, even as we move on to the other aggregates. There's still, the body is still here. It's still sensing, breathing, listening. It's where we can really find those sensations and watch the arising and passing away. The second aggregate is feeling tone, or Vedana in Pali. It's like the taste of the experience. I think many of you know about the podcast 10% Happier with Dan Harris. And he recently did a 4-week series on the four foundations of mindfulness. The second foundation of the four foundations is feeling tone, or Vedana, just as it is the second of the five aggregates. I recently listened to a talk by Christina Feldman. It's number 500 if you're interested. It was really good. She calls Vedana the ruler or queen of consciousness. That's a pretty important title for this khanda. And in my experience, you know, while Vedana is taught often because of its importance and its prevalence in the teachings, I find that we practitioners often skip over it. So before we get into how to work with it, let me explain a little bit more what these feeling tones, these Vedana, is all about. As soon as we have some sensed or experience, there's often an immediate feeling tone that pops up. We find the experience either pleasant, unpleasant, or neither. You've probably, for those of you who've been around longer, you've probably heard a lot of these talks, and they say that when pleasant Vedana arises, it leads us to want more, to keep the experience. It kind of leads us to clinging. When unpleasant experiences occur, it kind of leads us to aversion. I don't like this. I have to get rid of this. And other kinds of things about, like, why is this happening to me? Who made this happen? That kind of thing. And then when experiences are kind of more neutral, neither pleasant nor unpleasant, it can lead to kind of a dullness of mind. Sometimes it can lead us to try to stir up something really juicy because we don't like that kind of neutral or dullness in the mind. All of these impulsive reactions to Vedana, the feeling tones, is what we're talking about here. And I wanted to share a few of my recent experiences sitting with Vedana. The first one is kind of a confession of what happened when I totally did not practice with Vedana. So I started my sit, it was last week, with the intention of being open and receptive to all the sense doors. And before I knew it, I was just inundated with sounds from the traffic and sounds from my neighbor, smells from the lip balm I had used, every point of where my body touched the chair and the floor. I felt this kind of explosion of restless energy. And instead of going to Vedana, my thoughts went to, well, maybe I should try some breathing practices to calm the energy or offer some metta to kind of quiet the mind. And then I had the thought of what a bad idea this intention was to experience all these sense doors all at the same time. And I kind of thought, well, you really screwed up. You don't even know what you're doing. You've been doing this a long time. Then I had the thought about how my high level of energy, which is really good in my daily life, is a problem on the cushion, and I needed to do something about this problem. All of this in this just a 30 minute sit. Well, that sit was in this small group that I sit with on Wednesday mornings, and we always share about our sit with each other. So I confessed to my friends, and one of them said, "Wow, you were first trying to use your practice in order to push something away." So here I was using my breathing and metta practice as a way of pushing away what was going on. And then she said, "You know, where was your practice with Vedana?" And she was so right. If I had practiced with the feeling tone and just said, "This is unpleasant, unpleasant, unpleasant," perhaps I could have watched as that restless energy changed. It may not have gone away, but undoubtedly it would have changed some. And I could have avoided that huge jump of "I'm a bad meditator," and or trying to use different strategies to push away something that just was there. So it was kind of one of those many humbling experiences you have where you realize, oh, I know about Vedana, and here it was, I was avoiding it. So my second experience is, those of you, there's quite a few people here who maybe in the past or currently wear brassieres. So in wearing a bra, often the straps slide down off of your shoulder onto your arms. And I'm always walking around pulling this up and stuff. And I'm sitting in this sit, and I notice that the bra straps have slipped, and I'm noticing unpleasantness. Well, instead of raising my hand and doing anything with it, I decided to just experience the unpleasantness of it. And then I asked myself, well, why was it unpleasant? And I realized that it was unpleasant not because the sensation of material on this part of the body is not very different than sensation on material on this part of the body, but it was because I have this belief that these straps belong on the top of the shoulder, not down closer to the arms. And I realized that I'm going to ask myself in the future when I have these unpleasant experiences, is it unpleasant because I believe it shouldn't be happening? Or is it really unpleasant because of the direct physical experience? And then the last experience with this was, again, a recent sit. And I had set the intention to focus on body and Vedana. And I had a real busy morning and my head was kind of buzzing, but I sat and I quieted down and I sensed that there was a lot of ease in my body. I was watching the breath, and as the inhale kind of affected the ribs, of course, which it always does, but it seemed to just infuse my entire upper body. And I was aware that there was just a real sense of pleasantness as the body was relaxed and the breath was moving. And instead of going towards clinging of, oh, I want to keep this forever, what it went to was gratitude. So awareness of Vedana doesn't always lead to clinging or aversion. It can just be a feeling tone that you notice, and then a fairly wholesome thought of, wow, I'm really happy and grateful for a body that is at ease. And even when I noticed the pain in my left foot, I thought, oh yeah, that's really unpleasant. And I sent more of a sense of compassion to my foot. So Vedana can teach us an awful lot. None of us really have a say in determining whether the moment is going to be pleasant or unpleasant. If we were in control, we'd probably want all the moments to be pleasant so that we could just be at ease. But even though we aren't in charge of what feeling tones arise, we pretty much instantly can make them about me and mine. But if you're aware of them, you've got that momentary time when you can choose, what am I going to do with this? It's pleasant, it's unpleasant, it's neutral. Do I have to either grab onto it or push it away? Or maybe I can just learn from it. Vedana in and of itself is important. And not only because it gives us this opportunity to see what is happening, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, but because it is the pause between sensation and reaction. Vedana is that pause. And that pause is a powerful gift that we give to ourselves. When we stop and we notice, what's my response to this sensation? What's my response to the thought? It gives us that pause to know that we have some choice in how we're going to respond. So you can see how these first two aggregates are real learning centers for knowing the nature of phenomena, that they arise and they pass away. They are the practice ground, along with these next three, for using the words of the Buddha. With whatever is arising, this is not mine, this is not I, this is not myself. Thank you for your attention.